Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 544. I'm Tom Cagley, your host, and in the Spamcast 544, we feature our interview with Yeppe Haida. Mr. Haida and I discussed his new book, Nucleon, the missing formula that measures your IT development team's performance. Our discussion centers on the book, but also touches on meritocracy and why you want top performers on a team. This is a wide-ranging interview with thought-provoking ideas as we talk about Nucleon. Yeppe's bio? Yeppe Haida has been working with complex system development for more than 30 years. Serving the largest IT development departments, he is the CEO and owner of 7N, who is an agent for top 3% IT specialists. 7N has departments in the US, Switzerland, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Poland, India, and Denmark. In September 2018, he published the book Nucleon, the missing formula that measures your IT department's performance, where he describes how to calculate a hard number for an IT team's performance that could be best compared to that of horsepower in a car. In the book, he also measures the factors that hold back an organization's delivery and identifies the most impactful areas for improvement. Before we jump into the interview, remember, I'm doing a workshop on value chains and a talk at QAI Quest 2019, May 13th through 19th in Chicago. Do you need a discount? I have a discount code. Register at www.QAIQuest2019 using the code SPEAKER10. And by the way, Jeremy Berrio, also of the podcast, will be there. You can come hang out with us. Now, are you ready to discuss IT performance? It's time for the interview. Yeppe Haida, welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
It's an honor. Thank you.
It's an honor for me, actually. We met, I think it's been almost 2 months now, in Bangalore, India, when you were presenting at the ISMA conference there. And you, I think we got stuck in a cab, by the way, a Uber without seatbelts, if you remember correctly. I think that, I think that both made us both crazy in India traffic without seatbelts. But as we were going back to the hotel, we started talking about your book, Nucleon. And it really intrigued me, and I thought you'd make a great guest on the Software Process and Measurement Cast to talk through your book. Before we dive into some specifics, why don't you give the audience a little bit of the premise of the book?
Yeah, well, basically, Nucleon is a mathematical formula where we attempt to calculate the amount of horsepowers that you have in your development team. There are obviously several components in the formula, nine, of which the main formula is the people power. So we try to put a number on how much throughput is there in an individual, how much can they deliver. And then we adjust it for how you have organized yourself, which is something you can easily change. And there are four components in that. And then we have four components in the level of complexity that you operate in. So let's say that you also have to maintain a lot of legacy applications. Then we try and put numbers on those items too, which are also four items. And so that basically calculate, you know, this team, task independent, how much can they deliver?
The common refrain when someone talks about measuring people, and especially measuring individuals, is that, hey, we're working on teams. What is the impact of an individual on a team? Or why would we want to have individuals measured and then so we know something about their level of throughput? Because it's the team that matters, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's tomato. I mean, a team is the product is just composed by individuals, right? And what's most important here is that people make a difference, and we know that. I mean, we've known that for all time, that that the individual, the team, the organization is by far the most productive component in everything we do. I mean, it's really that is the component that makes the by far largest difference, whether you code in this environment or that environment, or if you use that methodology or that methodology, is also important, but not as far as it, not as important as the people.
Most of the folks in the Agile world would argue that we should just focus on the output. One of the more striking things early in the book, other than a discussion of causal thinking, by the way, which I thought was intriguing, took a lot of notes there, was the thought process of taking this equation and moving to the right side to the combination of people and organization. Why should we worry about measuring and working on the right side of the equation, not just focusing on the output?
Well, you know, this is trying to handle a conflict that has been going on as long as I remember. Management just wanting more output. IT knowing that output is a product of some other stuff. And when you've talked about the other stuff in the IT department that actually produces the output, management, top management, CEO level, CXO level, start thinking about other stuff like their boat or the weekend that comes up or how they're going to sell that big contract. Nobody really cares. So the strategic alignment between management or business, you could say, and IT has just been non-existent for all the 35 years that I've been in the IT industry. And by introducing or, you know, clarifying causal thinking, we try to force people to talk about the same topics. So you want more output? All right, let's discuss what can generate more output. Should we go from waterfall to an agile methodology? We know that will give you potentially 24 in average percent increase in output. So, you know, is that a number that is important for you? All right, let's look at what it takes to go from waterfall to agile. There's an investment there. There's a reduced output while people learn the new methodology. But now we're talking about the same topic. We're actually forcing business to enter our playing field and discuss the issues at hand.
One of the striking, and there were a number, so for those of you who haven't picked up a copy of Nucleon, the book is actually fairly short. It is with endnotes, and I'm paging through my copy to get this correct right now, roughly 119 pages long. So all in, this is a fairly short book, but with a lot, almost every sentence has a lot of power in there. Let's, just to make sure people are on the same path, a nucleon is what?
A nucleon is a unit of power, a measurement unit, like horsepower in a car. So a team of, let's say, 20 people where you have an absolute expert, two almost experts, 15 average Joes, and two rookies straight out of university who don't even know where to pick up the coffee, that kind of team would probably produce in an average organizational model, average complexity, around 420 nucleons. So you know how many nucleons you now have in that team, and you can also look at how to improve the number of nucleons by looking into the formula, right? And testing different ways to improve.
Why don't you take the readers and listeners through how you came to wrestle with the idea that there's a difference between being equal in worth and actually being good at something?
Well, you know, I think basically we had a lot of, I guess, ethical issues when we wanted to put numbers on people. But I want to tell you, my fundamental view on people is that every individual is a 10 or a potential 10. But it might be that you're not a potential 10 in enterprise architecture, right? I mean, that takes a special kind of woman or man to be a top-notch specialist in enterprise architecture. You have to have the right personality, the right level of cognitive ability. You have to have a lot of experience in the field, a lot of mileage in your legs. And it's important for us to know what level you're at in life, because that will certainly make a difference when we go about planning how much work you can take upon you.
I'm always struck by teams that are very homogeneous in terms of thought process and ideas. How does diversity of thought and approaches help teams wrestle with big problems?
The whole area of group dynamics that we in the book call, that I in the book call, spillover effect. I mean, the whole concept that someone can play you good, I mean, they can help you, assist you in playing better. We know that from the soccer, from the sports area. We know that from many, many different fields. And you could write literally tens of books on that topic. And so I've just kind of like passed it superficially in the book. And I also think it's a very mature area of knowledge. So I didn't want to go too deep into group dynamics. But when I wrote the book, I had my executive assistant help me. And he was just increasing my productivity by at least 300%. I could feel it. He played with me without questioning too much. He was too young to really question my gut feeling assessments in the early stages of the book. But he was very sharp on the mathematics, and he was hardworking. So he helped me so much, and made me more efficient. So the fact that I had someone to work with that, you know, expected me to deliver on Tuesday when we said Tuesday and all that, and helped take some of the load off my back, was really something I think we can all recognize. So diversity in that area. Yeah, I think diversity is very good. I think there's a lot of knowledge out there on how you should compose your teams out of a diversity perspective.
Diversity, I think, also helps us pull back and recognize blind spots. And I think you talk about that in the book. So the formula for Nucleon, and we won't describe that, and I think people should pick up the book and... It is an interesting scientific-looking formula that basically talks through the impact of people, organization, and complexity. Obviously, I think from the book, I would suggest that you feel that people are the biggest component of making a difference on that. But how can the other two attributes, organization and complexity, how do they affect the horsepower that a person can bring to an organization?
Yeah, well, we look through all the areas that affect complex systems development and basically rank them. How much do these areas affect? I mean, you can group them in hundreds of different ways, I guess. So, and you can see, our world is very complex. Tom, don't you miss sometimes the good old days when you just had a green 3270 screen and everything was IBM and, you know, the only language you knew was Kix COBOL DB2. I mean, that was the good old days. This is not what we live with today, right? Yeah. Distributed systems, security issues, performance issues, loads of interfaces to everything. So we went through the entire universe of IT complex systems development departments, and we basically looked at all the components we could find and say, how does this affect our performance? Because performance in the shape and form of delivering new functionality quickly and securely. How that is really important, and how does these things affect our performance level? And basically, we identified 9 areas that really made a difference, and there was actually quite a bit of distance down to number 10. So it would have been 9 nice with 10 areas, right? I mean, nice round number, but 9 areas were the areas that we could really identify.
Why only 9 areas? I mean, that was sort of intriguing, and obviously you didn't go into great depth in the book as to why the other ones, you know, theoretically might not have an impact, but why do you think that it's so few? I mean, people would say, oh, we work in such complex organizations, such complex world, it can't be 9. Why do you think it is only 9 that have such a dramatic effect?
Yeah, well, perhaps it's also philosophy. I might have a blind spot, I know. I mean, that wouldn't be the first time. But I think if you handle these 9 areas, you're really well off. You're really well off. And I think you're even on the brink of what people can manage mentally. I mean, 9 areas are actually quite a lot.
Yeah, I think that is actually a good point. The whole idea of proximity to decision maker, and maybe as I was reading through that section, it was very germane to some conversations that I was having. So maybe it's just struck me because it was so topical. Take us through the idea of proximity to decision maker as having an impact on the ability of a person to actually be productive.
I think this is a well-known area within complex systems development for all of us, right? I mean, basically all 9 areas are. There's nothing new under the sun in this formula. The only new thing is that we actually looked at what can statistically be verified as true influence and for how much. So all the numbers, and it's only, high school math, all the numbers, what can we actually prove that agile development or decision maker proximity and so forth affects our productivity? So everybody knows decision maker proximity. What happens if the businessman who owns the idea of the new application that we're developing, if he's not really present? How does that affect our team and the performance? And it really does, doesn't it? I mean, you have these, I have a couple of customers who have a business panel that meets every second month. And in between, they generate what I call black holes, because many times the development team will sit with decisions where they're doubting, should we go right or left? Should it be blue or red? Is this important or not? And if they cannot communicate with the owner, with the inventor of the system, it generates these black holes that just sucks out energy of the team. So there's nothing really magical to that portion. It's more a matter of the closer you are to the decision maker, the better you are at making a lot of productivity.
Why wouldn't you? At a team level, why wouldn't you get a moderately performing team, seed them with a couple of extremely high performers, tens as you call them in the book? Why wouldn't you do that rather than just to put a whole team of tens together? Wouldn't they not gel?
Well, actually, this is something that is an eye-opener in the book when you start calculating. So we've developed a free site called nucleonformula.com where folks can go in and assess their teams. And, you know, what the formula really exposes is the exponentiality in people performance. So the better you get, the more you find your shelf in life, the purpose of your life, the true meaning of what you really love to do, and you put a lot of energy into that, and you get a lot of experience, and you make a lot of mistakes and all that, you really, really become more efficient. So the difference is, you know, if you go from level one, which is the worst level, the rookie level, to the very most experienced individual who have found their shelf in life and who has spent, you know, the 10,000 hours plus on that and that really excel in every area, they're like index 100. So it's an exponential function. So if you go from 1 to 5, the average Joe in the formula will deliver 5 units per whatever month, hour. And the highly skilled, professional, super excellent individual specialist will deliver 100, so 20 times more. And I don't know if that's controversial to some, but do you believe, Tom, you've seen in the many, many projects that you've been a part of, that some people deliver 20 times more than the average Joe?
I think 20 times in some instances is an understatement, yes. There are people that outperform others on a dramatic scale.
And, you know, this is what I really want to get to, because I think we can all become tens. But it might be that we're doing the wrong job because our boss asked us to, because that position was vacant right now. It would really be opportune for him or her to have you do that work. And suddenly you'll find, even though you're an extrovert, you find yourself in a testing position, you know, and basically you would much rather be at the coffee machine, hanging out with people, asking them how they are. And here you are looking for errors and mistakes and misunderstandings. And it's not really your job, right? You'll never be efficient in that. But when we find these super achievers, we should put them together with other super achievers, basically. When we calculate the outcome of group dynamics and good people together, we can suddenly explain why some teams go out and develop the new Skype or the new Facebook or the new whatever, right? Amazon. I mean, these teams just, you know, if you deliver 100 units, and your group dynamics enables you to really multiply that even, and you help others multiply their many, many units, it's just exploding into productivity. And it takes a lot of average Joes or juniors or whatever. I don't want to sound degrading. English is my second language. I have huge respect for people being on the route to excellence, but it's just not comparable. So the only situations where we see what I call pyramid organizations, where you have a true senior at the top of your organization, then a lot of juniors in the bottom, is financially. That's successful. That's why the big consulting companies use those models, because if they can buy the junior for 300 and sell him for 900, and you even use a lot of them as the customer, that's a great business case. And then you can have that super specialist monitor all the juniors, right? So financially, that's really a rewarding model. But out of a delivery perspective, you rather want, instead of a 20 people average Joe organization, it's easy to calculate in nucleonformula.com that it's much smarter to have three tens on the team. They will by far outperform this big average team. Now, we've seen some business leaders say this many times. I mean, I think it was Steve Jobs who said, you know, or it was Bill Gates, whatever, a small A team will always outperform a big B team, right? So we all know this. I mean, it's not, again, it's not rocket science. It's not nothing new under the sun.
But everybody's equal. We have to treat everybody equal.
I think everybody is equal, Tom. I think everybody is of equal worth. I mean, to be really off the roof philosophical here, everybody's equal in the eyes of God, but not everybody is equal in enterprise architecture. I mean, I would suck at it. I would really hope for any company never to hire me as an enterprise architect. It's just such a hugely area of competence that is really complex. You want someone who's been doing it for many years, who've been, you know, who understands what it means for a big, to be in a big organization, centrally developed rules of engagement, a wide variety of technology stacks. How do we best enable people to work smoothly in the future? I mean, you want a good enterprise architect. You don't want me. I'll deliver a one, if even that. And, you know, a really good one could deliver 100. Let's put some words on that. Let's identify the very good enterprise architects. Let's even reward them accordingly. When we find our shelf in life, and when we truly contribute by hard work, making a lot of errors, gaining a lot of experience, isn't it interesting that in sales and management, we've been very good at rewarding people in those organizations? But as soon as it comes to IT, you know, everybody should be around the same level based on seniority. I mean, hey, some people should be rewarded with 5 times more pay, 10 times more pay, because they deserve it.
It is an interesting conundrum that we manage IT so fundamentally different than we measure other, what I would call much truer meritocracies than IT, but we like to think of IT as a meritocracy. So it is different. Before we start to wrap up, one of the things I want to bring us back to, and I think in my mind, one of the major punchlines to the book Nucleon, is why this matters, and to talk about the whole approach from an economic point of view. Why shouldn't we focus on just, you know, thinking about input costs? Why is that not the right answer in terms of getting the most out of our IT spend?
When we look at this financially, there are two major perspectives in Nucleon. First of all, Christine Green, who's a Dane like me, and who's becoming now the president of the International Function Point User Group, we've been working on Nucleon and function points together. And it's really, really interesting because it looks like function points are probably the best predictor of how big an assignment is, an application, a task. Nucleon is probably the best indicator of how much delivery power is in the organization. And the good fun is that it looks like right now we're going to test that with 3 big banks this month, actually, in the next month. It looks like when you divide the number of function points with Nucleons, you get calendar time. And that's really, really bringing a smile onto my face because we've been so bad at predicting calendar time consistently across projects. And it looks like we found a way to do that. And if that's true, I'll be a speaker on a lot of conferences, I think. and a lot of people will be able to predict their projects better and not avoid front page scandals and the huge budgets overruns and all that. Now, so that's one really important aspect. And both Christine and I, we're really crazy about what it looks like we found. The other perspective is that we want to be excellent in our delivery models. And guess what? We know what it takes to be excellent. There is no mystery. It is a black box right now because it's so complex. Complex systems development is complex, surprise, but actually there's so many components right now that we have not ranked in productivity effect. But we have done that in Nucleon. So right now we know exactly how much it costs you to use a waterfall process, a methodology instead of an agile process. I mean, we have thousands of projects evidence on what the effect is. So we've dragged all that data into the light. So now we know why we perform as we perform. Because we have bad people or wrong people doing wrong things or whatever, or we've bought too many juniors and not enough experts, or if we're too far away from our decision makers, or if our enterprise architecture sucks, or if we have an old methodology that should be renewed, whatever. We know exactly what the effect will be if we change that, if we improve on that. So when we know how long this project is going to be, and if we are not satisfied with the outlook, we can actually change it, but we can do it enlightened of the consequences. So that's what Nucleon brings to the table financially, I think.
If it were your call, would people focus on the cost side of the equation, sort of that gross cost side of the equation, or would they think about the cost per unit of output?
This is really an interesting question, Tom. First of all, I think on the top of any CXO's mind, it's actually speed of delivery. They don't even really care about cost right now. When that is said, the only reason why they do care about cost is because they cannot see what affects performance today. So by introducing Nucleon, we open that black box and we show them what affects your performance. People, the way you organize, how complex your environment is. Now, when they get their eyes on that, I think the most business people, they just want their IT to really be superior because it means so much for them in, you know, winning market share and beating competitors and so forth. They just want the best IT. If they now know what to do to deliver better IT, I think they're willing to invest. And yes, I think they would, when they look at the horsepowers of their IT engine, they want to pay a lower price per unit. That would be smart of them to think like that. And not anymore on a lower price per hour. So, Tom, if people adapt Nucleon, I think your rates will go up.
Well, that would be, I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I would too. It would be fair.
The book, Nucleon, is packed with tidbits that probably we don't have time to dive into all of the, you know, the level of granular detail. I mean, there was a story in there about a leader who is moving on and passed a list of 100 names of people that his replacement couldn't afford to lose. And I thought that was, even though it was a very large company, I think that really does boil down to telling the story in just sort of a metaphor way of why there are critical players that are part and parcel of getting things done. And that while everyone else is important, there's more to it than just saying, hey, I need 100 bodies kind of scenario. And I think if nothing else, if people want to read the book and they should, I think that's a takeaway that struck me as I was going through this. If tomorrow morning you woke up and, by the way, are you a tea or a coffee person?
Coffee.
All right. So if tomorrow morning somebody woke you up and handed you a cup of coffee and a magic wand and said you could change any two things that affect how work is done in IT, what would those two things be and why?
The two things would be in the people area. The one thing would be better at communicating with your IT organization how they individually can improve and become tens, every and each one of them who wants to put in the effort, that is, right? I mean, we all know that excellence is 1 to 10% talent and the rest is hard work, right? And not everybody's prepared to pay that price. And fair enough, they have other priorities. But those who want to put in the mileage, how can they best develop as individuals? And I, by the way, think that the open source Sphere model is very good as a vehicle of communication. But we have further tools in my company, 7N, that we look at, you know, when we talk to our consultants, you shouldn't develop in this area. There's some things you can't change, and there's some things you can change. Those you can change and gain more experience in or whatever, you should work on that to improve your productivity as an individual. That whole deal is not emphasized well enough today. We don't have enough, we don't stress enough that people individually should develop all throughout their lives. That I would like to change so that every individual became as optimally successful as they could be. The other thing that I would like to change is for procurement departments to buy units of delivery and not hours with a price attached to it, or bodies, as you said, because that is just outright stupid and a losing strategy. So, you know, for everybody's sake, I would love procurement, professional procurement departments to start looking at and demanding from their vendors to show how much is this and that specialist delivering.
Yep, I had a author of Nucleon. And if we read the entire name of the book, the subtitle, The Missing Formula That Measures Your IT Development Team Performance, this has been a marvelous interview. And I think it really just scratches the surface of what this 107-page book really can generate in terms of being thought-provoking. If people wanted to continue the conversation, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, that's a good question, Tom. I haven't really thought about the business model for the book. You know, I have a very successful agency for these nines and tens in Denmark that is now becoming more and more international. And that's quite kind of like my life. So the book is just an attempt to recap on 35 years of experience and how I think folks should look at it. So I don't have any consulting services for sale or anything, but we could do another podcast, Tom.
And I would like that.
You're always welcome. It's a pleasure to hang out with you. I think we had a wonderful time in Bangalore.
Absolutely. And again, as I said, I think we just scratched the surface. There are a number of areas in the whole discussion of culture and organization structure that we didn't get to today, that I think the listeners should pick up the book and spend some time thinking about, because this isn't, even though we talk about this as being a tight, interesting, small formula, the amount of thought process and lift that went into making this short enough to be able to read in roughly a day, it doesn't stop people from having to think about it for several days afterwards. Yeah, but this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for being on the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
And thanks for having me. It was really a true pleasure, and I would love to continue discussing with people who are interested in this area of competence.
In Reread Saturday News, today we continue the reread of Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. This week we tackle Chapter 1. The core of Chapter 1 is the definition of fast and slow thinking. This is also known as System 1 and System 2 thinking. These are the characters in Kahneman's book. Software development is a constant stream of choices and decisions. So determining which decisions can be safely driven by judgment and which require conscious choice is an important part of any process improvement or transformation. Remember, buy your copy, read along. Link to the essay is in the show notes. In the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 545, and by rights, that should be a magazine show with columns and discussions and essays. However, on April 24th, I had the great fortune to interview Cheryl Hammond, Jenny Tarwater, Faye Thompson, and Linda Potter. We discussed launching new voices, women in Agile, planned activities for Agile 2019, and more. There is a time-sensitive call to action in the podcast, so we're doing it next week. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, are we there yet?